Hello and welcome everyone to the CBI's SME webinar today, delivered very much in partnership with our friends at DHL. Now, for those of you I've yet to meet, my name is Deborah Fraser and I'm the Chief Commercial Officer here at the CBI. The focus of our session today is really on exporting and the potential it has to create growth opportunities, but specifically for small and medium-sized companies. Now, to take us through this story and this journey, which hopefully you are either on or thinking of going on, we've got a number of experts who will be speaking today. We've got participants. We'll get a chance to hear from the CBI and how we're working with SMEs to enable market entry and international growth. We'll be hearing from DHL in terms of the support that is available to firms and how they can support companies overcome any issues. And finally, we're also going to be hearing from Plum Products, who is a CBI SME member experiencing fast international growth. Now, the three speakers we have with us today are Will McGarrigle, who is Head of Global Trade Policy at the CBI. We've got Abby Brody, Vice President for Sales at DHL Express UK, and Phil James, International Director for Sales at Plum Products. So first up, we've got Will. Well, he'll be covering off how exporting can benefit businesses and the wider economy, the government's trade agenda and opportunities opening in global markets, finding the right advice and guidance, and CBI work on international trade.
Thanks very much, Debs. So I think first off, we probably need to acknowledge that it's a very challenging time for global trade. I mean, many of the pressures that we are seeing kind of domestically are being felt worldwide. So that's from supply chain issues, which were exacerbated by the awful conflict in Ukraine, through to restrictions on international travel, sort of a hangover of the pandemic. It has been having an impact on kind of UK imports and exports. And in our latest economic forecast, we are predicting that even by the end of next year, our exports in UK are expected to remain 10% below pre-pandemic levels. So a little bit of a gloomy start, but that's where my sort of gloomy outlook ends. Today's session, as Deb said, is all about the kind of value of exporting and particularly how that can benefit SMEs. So I think despite those challenges in the global economy and overcoming the sort of new barriers with the EU, we need to make sure we do all we can not to turn away from international trade. It actually makes it all the more important with the challenges that businesses are facing to kind of find new growth opportunities overseas, and exporting is obviously a route to that. So in terms of that, the value of exporting piece to businesses, through the pandemic, we found that companies that sort of traded with multiple countries, multiple markets, you know, they managed to have diversified risk, and that meant that they proved to be pretty resilient. And also our analysis shows that firms that export are on average 21% more productive. So at an individual company level, it's obviously that growth opportunity, but there are wider benefits too. It also feeds in obviously to kind of regional and national economy growth. So, you know, at the CBI, we're big champions of business as a force for good for communities up and down the country, feeding into the government's levelling up agenda. And this year we've particularly got a campaign around Go for Growth, really raising ambition levels from government to really drive economic growth across the country, and international trade is a really important driver of that. So we feel if we can maximise the UK export opportunity, particularly in the SME community, given they make up the vast majority of companies in the UK, we can really underpin long-term economic growth and the creation of good quality jobs with this international trade agenda. And that is even more important now, given the economic circumstances we face and the cost of a living situation. So that's the kind of export imperative. We're not starting from a low base. You know, the UK is the second largest services exporter in the world. It's a great place to do business. But when we compare ourselves to, say, Germany, we do punch below our weight. And we did do a bit of analysis last year around the academic term of superstar exporters, which is a company that exports 10 or more products to 10 or more markets. 40% of German exporters are superstars compared to 14% in the UK. So a little bit of a difference there that we need to overcome. So that's the context and the sort of export imperative. But we acknowledge, for SMEs, it can be difficult to know where to start, who to speak to. And for current exporters, it can often be difficult to know, you know, which markets to target, who are the right connections in those markets. So, you know, there's a big job for us to do to ensure that the sort of support ecosystem is there for SMEs. So one of the things we're doing at the CBI is revamping our digital offer. So we're creating a global trade hub, which will signpost to useful resources in the public and private sector. The first phase of that will be live very soon. And then we'll build that out into a more holistic offer further down the line. In terms of the government support, it's bolstered its sort of practical initiatives in the export space, particularly through the export strategy published last November. So that includes the Export Support Service, which many of you may have come across, basically a helpline to get practical information on UK-EU trade to start with, but it is expanding to all markets globally soon. DIT also have an Export Academy, so worth looking into if you're new to exporting. And as I said, plenty of support out there in the private sector too, and we'll hear from Abby shortly on all the work that DHL do in this space. But also worth considering talking to your bank. They can help, you know, identify the right markets for you and obviously offer support on finance as well. But do let us know how the CBI can support in any of that. So on the CBI's sort of work on international trade, just a very quick overview. Through our kind of flagship policy campaign, Seize the Moment, we are increasing our practical initiatives to support SMEs in membership, but also kind of to showcase exporting as a key opportunity to the wider business community too. So I've mentioned that kind of idea around superstar exporters. We're taking that analysis into a sort of new initiative where we'll work with a handful of companies already exporting, but with the potential to expand into more markets. So we'll use the CBI's relationships with government here in the UK, but also overseas as well, and also draw in professional services firms from membership to support that mission. I've mentioned we're improving our digital offer to signpost to useful resources. And we'll also increase our kind of SME mentoring offer as well. So we've just been launching a podcast series, for example. I mentioned UK being a particular world leader in trade and services. We see that as a really big strategic opportunity in the long term. So we've launched a Trade and Services Council to really champion that opportunity. It's industry led, but with the backing of government, Number 10, Treasury, DIT and others. So that's really positive. That includes financial services and professional business services. Obviously, is a real UK strength, but actually goes much wider than that, feeding into the sort of regional growth agenda, whether it's education exports, creative industries, architecture, you know, that really holistic services piece. And of course, we at the CBI continue to feed into trade negotiations, keeping members up to date as well. It's a very fast moving government agenda, which is what I'll move on to just to wrap up what the government's up to. So firstly, on trade deals, a lot going on. DIT have been, well, they did upgrade a lot of the EU rollover deals a couple of years ago. So they're now looking to sort of make them more bespoke. So with the likes of Canada and Mexico, for example, so we're feeding in there. You will have seen in the press, or you will be aware, that lots of new free trade agreements are also on the table. So Australia was the first one out the door. New Zealand was next. India is very live right now. That is a huge opportunity if the government gets it right. But we are very engaged in that and making sure that substance wins over this real desire to get it done very, very quickly. And the UK is also joining CPTPP, the Trans-Pacific Club of 11 countries. So that's something we're well engaged in too. So this whole agenda, in theory, should make it easier for British companies to break into new markets, you know, cutting costs, making us more competitive. But clearly, trade deals are useless unless businesses are actually, you know, seizing the opportunity. So a lot of work to do through the export strategy that I mentioned to raise awareness of the benefits of trade deals, how businesses can use them to get into new markets. And that's where we at the CBI can help. You know, we're working with DIT very actively on their export strategy delivery. to make sure that whole support ecosystem is right, and working with our members to help realise the opportunities. And I know DHL are doing some work in that space as well. So perhaps a good segue to Abby, and I'll hand back to you, Debs.
Thank you. Yeah, great segue, because now we're going to be going over to Abby. And Abby's going to be taking us through, you know, very much DHL's views on global trade trends, the services that they're able to provide to facilitate trends, and then experiences really from the horse's mouth. So from customers and what other businesses can learn from their experiences. So thank you so much for joining us, Abby. Over to you.
Thank you, and thank you everyone for listening to me today. It's quite exciting to get the opportunity to talk to some small and medium-sized businesses about what we've kind of learned over the last few years. I think everyone's aware of the challenges, and you can't get away from it with the press, but for us, we're actually very positive. So, you know, it's very clear some of the challenges that had been there through the pandemic and with Brexit. However, we do see really exciting opportunities with some of the new trade deals, and also the ability to trade from the UK. So when you actually look at the new FTA deal with Australia, that's actually expecting trade to increase by 53%, which is a real positive. And when you look at ONS trade figures, then exports have actually grown over 8% to EU and over 6% to the rest of the world. So it's certainly not all doom and gloom, but it really is about making sure that we use the right information, the right tools and the right support to get the best out of these deals and be able to, you know, trade really successfully. When we actually look from a DHL perspective at our smaller customers, we're actually seeing really good growth. So with the larger customers, then yeah, we have seen a little bit of a decline year on year. But when we look at the SMEs, they're actually growing 20% year on year. So there really is an ability for entrepreneurs within the UK to make the most of international trade deals. We see a lot of it from e-commerce businesses, but also the new kind of growth of B2B e-commerce, which I'm promised is the next big thing. And I think what we've found is a lot of customers in the B2B world expect the same level of experience that they get if they're at home shopping online. So really we find that giving customers advice and support around how they can really give the same sort of customer experience that a consumer would expect on an online business for the B2B world is actually helping businesses become really successful. But very similar to what Will was saying, when we look at our largest and most successful customers, on average, they're shipping to over 180 countries worldwide. And actually, if we took the average number of countries that customers are sending to in the different segments of their volume per month, it actually decreases. So again, a real kind of focus that the more countries that you're shipping to, then hopefully the more success that you're going to have as a business. One of the other big trends that we've seen is a real variety. So I'll be honest, a few years ago, most of the B2C world out of the UK was fashion, a lot of fast fashion, luxury goods as well. We've seen that really change. So the pandemic changed people's buying habits, what they would actually purchase online. I remember going to a customer a few years ago that actually sells wallpaper, and they said to me, "Abby, there's no way people are ever going to buy wallpaper online. They're going to come to the shop and they're going to look at it before they buy it." Lo and behold, it's one of the faster growing industries now for people buying online. So the pandemic has changed what people will buy online and also changed what people expect from a buying experience. And I think we still have a real opportunity to tap into that. So when we actually look at our industries, from a DHL perspective, we've got a real growth in health and kind of sports equipment and things like that. So I think with the pandemic, people realized actually life is short. Let's make sure I make the most of it. It's work-life balance and also kind of healthy lifestyle. So we're seeing people buy things online that you would never expect to be sent to the other side of the world from a kind of health perspective and a sports perspective. So I think that really is an opportunity for us moving forwards as well. But then again, another positive, so it's, you know, I'm quite a positive person, is our active customers. So the number of customers in the SME business within DHL is growing. year on year, and we've seen that continual. So I think Britain really is kind of a country of entrepreneurs, and we can still really, really bask in that glory. And I think there's still lots of other businesses that can start up and be successful from the UK. At DHL, we've got a lot of support for SMEs, so we really try and make sure that our support is consultative. It's not just trying to sell you DHL, it's really about what is good for your business and where we can fit in and support you. We've got tools that will kind of do analytics on your website to see where you might actually have customers that you don't realize. So we've done this with a customer not so far away, where we actually found out that they had lots and lots of traffic coming to their website from South Korea, and it wasn't on their target list of countries to be moving to or to really kind of doing a lot of advertisement. So we spoke to them about that and showed it, and they actually started a South Korea website and it went through the roof. So I think it's really about taking a step back and looking at the business and seeing where we can support that's going to be right. And it's knowing your market and where actually your customer base might be. The other thing that we have is called a website health check, and it's kind of what it says on the tin. So it goes through a number of things, like, for instance, do you have an express option? We've had customers where, from a B2C perspective, where they put that express option, their basket value has increased by 70%. We know that on a kind of consumer world, we don't like friction. You know, if I've ordered something online, I don't like it if it gets stuck in customs and someone's phoning me up for duties that I didn't expect. Now, I even work in the business and I've managed to be full for this one myself over the years. So it's really about, if you can, for instance, we can support you to sell it as duties and taxes included, then the first point that that consumer gets from you is the excitement of the shipment being delivered. They're not getting a phone call, someone asking them for money. And actually, when we've done external kind of insight suggests that about 70% of people would prefer to pay the duties and taxes up front. So you're actually giving your consumers the experience that they would like. Then one of the other really big topics for us is sustainability. So I can't go to a customer meeting now without it being on the agenda from a customer point of view. And quite rightly so, you know, it's our world and we need to make sure that it's there for future generations. At DHL, we have a sustainability health check as well. We obviously love a health check. And with that, it goes through the sort of things that as a business, we can support you to offset your carbon. We've also got, we actually buy sustainability air fuel as well, so that you can buy that and make sure that your shipments are fully sustainable air fuel. So a number of things around sustainability that we can kind of have conversations with you about and support, even down to the label on the box when it gets to your end customer or consumer saying, hey, this shipment's carbon is fully offset, which is a great thing for a business to be able to promote for their customers. And I guess if I was going to end on anything, it's around some of our experiences. So we know what a lot of our large customers have done to be successful. We've also been through the pain with them of when things haven't gone so well, and we've managed to actually learn from those mistakes. And I think that's where we really hope we would be able to kind of offer advice and things like that. Even down to, for instance, we had a company that sold bikinis and swimwear. And they really wanted to tap into the Australian market, but they only had a .gb website. So when they were kind of doing different marketing and things like that, they were trying to sell different things within the UK during winter time around kind of swimming and things like that. Then they actually did a .au website. They could do different promotions in the summer in Australia to the winter here, because they didn't want to be on sale during summer in Australia, whereas that would have been when they wanted to get rid of some of the stock in the UK. So it's little things like that that can really make a difference to tapping into the international market. And I guess that's probably where I'll end on from a DHL perspective. But we're definitely here to help and support and share any knowledge that would be of help to small businesses within the UK.
Thank you, Abby. It's a really interesting range of support that the company provides. Just of interest, and one of the questions that's popped up: which ones are available to non-customers? Is there a sort of is any of those that you've just discussed available to non-customers, or is it very much for your client base?
No, so I mean, to be honest, our website health checks are online, so we can share the website address where they're at, and anyone can go and use them. But we're more than happy to get in touch with anybody to see what support that we can give, and if it works out that actually having an account with DHL is good for the business, then great. But ultimately, we're here to help and support the UK for international business.
Yeah. Excellent. Right. If we could get that to the team listening in, if we get that the link to the health check, that'd be great, and we can send it in the follow up. Right. Our final speaker, and then we'll open things up to four more questions. Last but not least is Phil. And so Phil, what he's going to be able to do is give you very much that first hand insights into how Plum Products have accessed new markets, exported successfully, and grown their business. Phil's also going to be able to share the top tips that Plum have learned, if they've expanded globally, what they might do differently, and how exporting holds growth potential for SMEs. So, Phil, over to you.
Thank you, Deborah, and thank you very much as well for the welcome today to present and explain some of the journey that Plum Play has been on as a business over the last probably 6 or 7 years. Hopefully, a lot of our listeners and viewers today will know the brand. Plum Play is a 33-year-old business, family business, started here in the UK, and is one of the largest designers, manufacturers of children's play equipment. So hopefully a lot of the parents today on the call will know the brand, such items as trampolines, swing sets, play centres. I think really, you know, we've got something to be proud of. The team here have just touched on it in their presentations, but the UK as an exporter, we should be proud of something. As a country, we're very well thought of around the world. So, you know, all of our packaging, for instance, you know, we have designed in the UK with the British flag on all of our packaging. So when you do start to export, being here in the UK is really important. But back to sort of the business side of things, and, you know, why did Plum decide to export? Well, we have offices here in the UK. We also have offices in Hong Kong and Sydney, Australia. But we were very concentrated on our domestic markets. We have very much a Northern Hemisphere business. And that means we operated very much from February through to August time. But, you know, there's summer elsewhere in the world. So why couldn't we get more of a counter-seasonal balance to our product range? If we look at the US, you know, it's hot all year round. So ideal in sort of environments really for our type of product. If we look back to say 2015, that's probably when we first started our international adventure. We're probably very small, dealing with probably a lot of retailers around the world that probably had some partnerships with UK retailers, people like ELC, Tesco, who obviously have partners in other different regions. But as a business, we hadn't really sort of embraced international. Where are we today? We're in 57 different countries, not quite like Abby's 180 there. I feel she's done me on that front. But this year, we have a distribution network via agents, distributors, or sometimes we even do a lot of sometimes B2C ourselves. And this year, Plum will be about $40 million at retail for our export adventure. So from nothing in 2015 to where we are today, there's been a lot of progression with us as a business. And I'm delighted to say as well this year, we've also been given the Queen's Award for international growth, which for everybody in the company is a great accolade and something we're really extremely proud of. How do we go about doing that though? Because I'm sure there's a lot of people on the call who may not do any export whatsoever. And firstly, I would say it needs commitment. You can't really play at export. And it's really important. You've got to make your overall business ready for it. So a lot of people will be used to UK processes, the way we go about things, etc. And we need to bring the whole business on board, that you're not just going to be a UK business anymore. You're going to be a global business. And here at Plum, we like to say, we're going global. So we're going global, but we want to have a local process. So that has to be very much driven through from the top. So ideally, if you have a director level that can take ownership for your export journey, you know, please do that. You know, have a rough plan in place. What is that model that you're going to use for international? You need to do a lot of the research in advance of going. Don't go out there and expect the business is just going to happen. Make sure that you've prepared your businesses for that international adventure. Don't wait for that first order to come through the door and expect that you're going to be able to do it. It depends if it's a product related, if it's service related, whatever it may be. There will be some challenges to it. It will be probably two or three times harder to start with than what you're normally used to. But obviously, we can very much, you know, it's worth it in the long term. There will be some low-hanging fruit. You know, look at those particular territories where there aren't so many barriers to entry. If I look back to where Plum started, we started very much in the Middle East, which was an excellent network for us. Again, very high in terms of spend, average basket size, a very good distribution network across the whole of the Middle East that we were able to utilize. So it was a perfect base really for us with limited barriers to entry. Compared to somewhere, say, like the USA, where far more barriers to entry, far more risk as a business, and you get it wrong badly. So make sure you've got your entry to markets in a chronological order that you can actually achieve. First of all, proof of concept. You know, do you actually have a service or product that you can actually export, which is really, really important. So use a couple of markets, first of all, as your test bed. It may be that for some reason your service or your product range is purely UK related. Highly unlikely, to be honest, but make sure you've got that proof of concept first of all before you really roll that out. There is a lot of help out there as well. We've used heavily with CBI, DIT, etc., to really expand into some of our markets. So please do tap into that. You know, the world is a big place. You're not going to be able to go and do it by yourself. So there is a little help available. Things here that Plum have tapped into. So we've had, it used to be called the OMIS. I'm not entirely sure what it's called now, but the Overseas Market Introductory Service, where we utilize that in both France and Germany, whereby the embassy will actually contact potential customers for you on your behalf in local language and give you a whole range of introductions. And we found both of those two extremely useful for us in a market that we're not known at all. The brand doesn't stand for anything. So really helpful when you get somebody contacting you from the British embassy, they take note rather than some random person maybe from the UK that they might know of. We also held launch events, again, at the various embassies globally. So one of the ones in Saudi Arabia, we had a launch event in Riyadh, a lovely embassy there in Saudi, again, in conjunction. And people came to the event because, firstly, they wanted to come and see what the embassy looked like. But secondly, they're more interested. So please do use that. Grants, there's lots of grants and support available. So one of the big ones at the moment is the internationalization fund. It's matched funding up to 9,000 euros, I believe. Again, please use your local DIT members for that. We have found that extremely useful to be in contact with those people at all times, because there is a cost to entry in the markets. Some markets, you may be able to charge more for your product or service based upon what you're supplying. But more importantly, you will necessarily need to work to a lower margin to enter those markets. So please tap into all that different funding, whether it be localization through language, whether it be testing requirements, whatever it may be, setting up a website, etc. There's support there to be done. Also remember as well, that we are operating in some different countries. So please be culturally aware as well. For Plum as a business, we have to be quite aware in terms of what we put on some of our packaging, what we have on some of our websites, etc. For instance, in the Middle East, we need to be culturally aware there. Swimming costumes, that type of thing, you can't do that. So please have all those sort of thoughts in your mind when you're setting up there. But also, if you want speed to market, then please do use local resource as well. You might have one of your salespeople literally knocking on the door for 3 years to a potential customer. But actually, if you use an agent in the region or you use the help of, say, the embassy, et cetera, that'll give you a lot more speed to market. Yes, it will reduce in terms of initial margins, but long term, you will actually gain back. And you can't do it from behind the desk. I think really you do need to get out there. You do need to visit all your potential partners and do due diligence on that. So again, when you look at your initial adventure, you please set aside a budget for international travel, because that necessarily needs to be done. And more importantly, be patient. Some countries may take a lot longer to crack than others. And that's why it's important you have that plan in place to gauge that low hanging fruit. In some countries, they might literally just want to have a first meeting to get to know you, the second meeting to check that actually your business is still running, and then the third meeting to actually place the order with you or contract whatever you're offering there. So be patient, but it will happen. A testament Abby touched on there was obviously reflect current trends as well. Obviously, as she says, a lot at the moment in terms of the environment, but countries are all at different stages. So gauge again, where a region is in terms of some of the international trends. Just because that's a trend here in the UK may not be as important in other different countries. So make sure that you're reflecting there. In terms of what Plum would have done necessarily, I think maybe start earlier. We probably waited until sort of 23, 24 years into our development to start our international business. But we wanted to perfect, obviously, our UK model before we started to roll that out. But I think we could be a lot further ahead than we were now if we'd started earlier. But don't be afraid of exporting. There's huge benefits to businesses to exporting, whether it be with your factory base, whether it be with your overhead. So please embrace it. And as I said, please use the support that's there on offer. Back to you, Deborah.
Thank you, Phil. Really interesting, especially that sort of on the ground experience. And I think what it's something you sort of alluded to, but those businesses that do export, you go on such a learning journey, and as a result, your skills and expertise and the impact on productivity, as Will touched on as well, really does increase. And I think at the moment we are all very keen to increase our productivity and efficiency. So if export's not just a new market and a new place to trade, it also brings other benefits in terms of business processes. Look, I suppose it's maybe good to put a couple of questions past Abby and Phil in the first instance, but really in terms of, I suppose, common challenges, and Phil, you've already touched on this, so probably a bit of a mean question to you, but I suppose maybe Abby, come to you first, but what are some of the common pitfalls that actually businesses can stumble into when they're exporting and, wish they'd, could easily have been avoided?
I think one of the biggest challenges when you're new into it is really around the customs piece. So it's knowing how to get the paperwork correctly, how to avoid customs delays, and also how to make sure that you put exactly the right information so that you get charged the right duties. And I think that's quite important, because depending on how you describe it, if you don't use the correct harmonized commodity code, then it can get cleared against something else and you'd get a different duty bill than you might have been expecting. It's also knowing what is required for different products in different markets. Even down to, I had an example where a customer was sending hampers to the States. And apparently there is a quota of the amount of olives that you can send to the States as a business in a certain year. So the first few hampers were absolutely fine with olives in, but then they got to their quota. Nightwear to Australia, you have to make sure that it's non-flammable and has to say certain wording on the label. So it's tiny little intricacies like that you need to kind of be spot on to make sure that you have the right information of what can go to what country, what is required for it, and how you make that clearance easy, simple, and also quick.
And I think that's where your local DTI support will be able to help, but also, you know, sort of your sort of services, like, for example, DHL.
Yeah, we've also got a team of custom specialists that can support and give the right advice as well.
Right, excellent. Which is, especially if you're right at the start of the journey, that would be very, very reassuring to have. Phil, yeah. Is there anything that you didn't get to touch on? I know it's very comprehensive, so I'm sort of conscious this is probably quite a difficult question. But any sort of pitfall that you've stumbled across that you wish, you know, I wish I'd known about that before?
Not really. I think don't be afraid to get things wrong, because certainly our journey of the last 7 years, you will get things wrong. Just try not to repeat those mistakes. But it's impossible to plan really and know everything about every single market. Mm-hmm. Just make sure those mistakes aren't too costly. that's all I say. But no, you will get things wrong. It's inevitable. You can't know everything, even if you plan in the best way. So don't be afraid to making those mistakes.
Okay, thank you. And I suppose just what sort of question related, and again, what I'll do is, Abby, Phil, I'll come to you, and then I'll come to you for a more broader question that we've had to come in. But I suppose in terms of the pandemic and ability to move goods around and the world, you know, are you experiencing certain issues, and how can businesses mitigate those? And again, Abby, what I might do is come to you first, and then Phil, from your sort of experience, what you've done as an SME trading internationally.
Yeah, sure. So if I go first, I think for us it was a bit of both. So we saw huge volumes and uplift because of the pandemic and so many people moving to buy online. We also had, with the the drop in commercial airlift, then certainly around kind of capacity was a little bit of a struggle for a lot of providers. At DHL, we're very lucky because we have our own aircraft, so we were able to continue to keep moving things. But a lot of standard and mail providers that really kind of relied on commercial airlift were seeing really extended transit times and things like that. So from an express perspective, we were lucky that a lot of people wanted to move those shipments to express to ensure that they still could offer the consumers and their customers the right transit times. But certainly we had to lease additional aircraft and things like that. So it was a challenge, but also a real opportunity for us during that time as well.
Yeah. I think East Midlands Airport, didn't it become sort of the second or third busiest airport in Europe during the pandemic?
Did you know your stuff?
I do. Oh, it's because I'm a Nottingham girl. And it's a fun, it's a brilliant airport as well. Phil.
I don't think we've got long enough probably to analyse the logistical issues we've had over the last 3 years. In a nutshell, yes, obviously it caused an awful lot of problems. We do an awful lot of sea freight, and I think it's well publicised obviously what happened to sea freight prices during that period. And also we obviously as a business we ship a lot from Asia. So again, it's, you know, again, well documented, obviously the length of time it was taking for containers to container port delays, etc., which I'm happy to say in some countries is getting better. The US has still got big problems in Los Angeles port. And obviously we're still seeing in China issues with ports, obviously as their zero COVID policy there continues. We are seeing lockdowns in some ports, primarily in Ningbo, which obviously has lengthened things out. Here in the UK, we did struggle for truck drivers just to bring containers for both import and export, which caused us again lengthy delays on that front. But luckily, we are seeing improvements on both those. But I think we're sort of hopefully at the tail end of it now, but still some delays dependent on which country you're supplying to.
Thank you. And don't be deterred, I should say, just because we, you know, just, I mean, obviously it's not just, but don't be deterred. You know, exporting is still, and we want to get those British numbers up. Well, the final sort of question to you, you know, who's the CBI really engaging with on behalf of small businesses? And what are the key messages that you're sharing specifically to support and ensure that SME base has the support it needs?
Sure. Well, we have really strong relationships with with sort of across the whole of government really on the trade agenda. Obviously DIT leads, but a lot of different departments have a stake. Whether it's BEIS on that kind of regulatory environment that Abby was touching on, DCMS on digital trade, for example. So lots of strong touch points. I think I'd probably split it into the kind of short-term piece and the longer-term ambition piece. So, you know, some of the messages I outlined before around benefits that the SMEs can realise from the trade agenda and specifically trade deals. So I think it's making sure that those trade deals are fit for purpose, that they really are geared towards helping SMEs. That really features heavily in our conversations. Trade deals disproportionately benefit SMEs, basically. You know, it really reduces costs and the burden of trade. And Phil, you know, did a really good job there outlining some of the benefits of trade, where there are low, you know, market access barriers. So the trade deals can really help sort of smooth the way for SMEs. So I think that longer term ambition piece, it's about getting those trade deals right, and then working with DIT to make sure that as many businesses as possible are using them. And then there's the shorter term piece, I think, then, you know, that previous question around supply chains is a case in point, really. So, you know, we're getting, particularly after the Ukraine conflict started, we're starting to really hear supply chain issues coming through from members, and please do carry on feeding them in. We've been raising that with government. They found it invaluable just to understand the impact across the economy. I think it's that kind of short-term helping businesses mitigate impacts, those global headwinds that I was describing earlier, and then the longer term piece around really driving up the ambition on trade.
Great, thank you. Great timing as well, because we've just got less than a minute to go. So I will do a very, very quick wrap up. But very much final thank you to Phil, Will and Abby and our friends at DHL. So thank you so much for joining us. Everyone take care and have a great weekend when it comes. We hope it's as sunny for you as it is for Phil and I in Devon today. All right, take care everyone. Bye.